Just because I'm a winemaker doesn't mean I have to be a critic all the time.
Oh, this is fun and it's beautiful. You do it because you love it. And if you don't love it unconditionally and stupidly and you're not crazy passionate about it, you won't last.
You know, to stay out of the vineyard, I only have the shotgun for the boar and I'm thinking, great.
Turning sugar into alcohol is not really rocket science.
You think your car depreciates quickly. Don't hold a candle to what barrels do.
A lot of people don't realize Sonoma County is 1 million acres. Makes us about the size of Rhode Island as a state.
I mean, in my youth, my first couple of vintages, the crazy part was being lucky we're alive still.
The really cool thing about wine is it swims in the stream of history and civilization and everything else.
I worked 14 hours the day before I went into labor. I was determined to get most of that Chardonnay in.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 216. This week we visit with Tony Kosicek of Kosicek Vineyards in Geneva, Ohio. The Pinot Noir grape grows exceptionally well in the Grand River Valley AVA of Ohio. In fact, many vinifera grapes do well in this section of Ohio wine country. Tony Kosicek, owner of Kosicek Vineyards in Geneva, learned about grape farming young with the Concord grape. Today, Tony's winery sits on Route 534 and has been steadily growing and diversifying. We met with Tony a couple of weeks ago at the winery after only just discovering them late last year. I'm here in Geneva, Ohio, and I'm with Tony Kosicek of Kosicek Vineyards. How are you doing, Tony?
I'm doing well. And yourself today?
I'm doing good. It's, we are in January, about mid-January, and again, we're in Ohio, about 45 minutes or so, maybe an hour out of Cleveland. Foggy day. What kind of concerns do you have with weather out here at this particular point?
I really don't have any concerns as of right now. I guess if you look at maybe down the road here, if we get back below zero again, that would be our only concern this time of the year.
So have you had any issues with any flooding around this area? Because I know the Grand River's been pretty high.
Grand River's been pretty high, but our area here, the land, we have 56 acres. The property is pretty much rolling. Wine grapes are all tiled. So we don't have to worry about the water here. It'll roll right off, and what doesn't roll off comes out the tile.
Nice. Wow, 56 acres. How much of that is planted?
We have 25 acres in grapes.
That's a pretty good size. We visited you, I believe it was, somewhere around Thanksgiving last year. And this is it's a beautiful tasting room. And what's really nice is you come through the vines as you get here. How long have you been here?
We opened in November of 2013. Here as a grape farm, my grandparents came here in the 20s. Planted Concord grapes, which were all used for juice and jelly. My parents took over the farm after my grandparents, and subsequently we have taken over the farm also. Taken out Concord grapes, planting vinifera grapes, and slow transition, but it gets to the point where we'll be able to farm our own grapes, which this year we had a very nice crop. Versus having to source all of our grapes.
Did you keep any Concords just for the heck of it at all?
We do. We still have some that are under contract to Welch's. We also use a little bit of Concord. We sell Concord that the people in this area were grown up on Concord wine, still like it, still desire Concord wine, so we make that. And each winter we do make a small amount of Concord ice wine also.
Really? Concord ice wine? I've never had that before.
Concord ice wine is unique.
Yeah.
I don't know of anyone else making a straight Concord ice wine. 2 years ago, we made it as a true ice wine. Weather was correct to do it. Last year, we made it as a iced wine because it didn't get cold enough to freeze it correctly. This year, we returned to being able to do it as a true ice wine.
That's fascinating. Concord. I like that.
You get the taste of the grape, the taste of the Concord, but you also get some very strong hints of strawberry through it.
Really?
And it's really, it's interesting.
How much of that do you make? How many cases?
We make, let's see, this year we made about 60 gallons. Last year we made about 80 gallons. So enough just to get us through.
Yeah, sure. And about acreage-wise for the Concord?
What I have left, I think we have about 12 acres left, and nine of those are under contract with Welch's. The other 3 acres or whatever it comes out to, it'll be what we use here.
Sure. Well, I guess that's nice. I mean, it's a good base for your business, you know, to have that, I would think.
Well, and the nice thing is Concords are much easier to take care of. They're by the driveway. They look good coming in. It's more of an aesthetic thing than it is to really produce the Concords.
I'm just fascinated like crazy about this idea of your grandparents in the 20s starting out here, because I'm assuming back then there was good money in Concord grape farming.
Probably better than there is now.
Yeah.
I can still remember. I had my first vineyard at age 15, I believe. And, through Welch's then, you were making in the mid-300s per ton, maybe $400 per ton for Concords. Now we're lucky to get a little bit over $200 a ton.
Oh, wow.
You know, that's 35 years later.
That's tough farming.
That's tough in farming. So that's why many of the Concord vineyards have been let go, have been torn out, going the way of vinifera, winemaking grapes. A lot more work involved, but in the end you have a grape that you can use.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. So you started, obviously, when you were 15. I guess that was not necessarily your entree into wine, but it was into grape growing, right?
Now, I grew up here on the farm.
That's great. What a great place to grow up.
At 5 years old, my father put extensions on the clutch and the brake pedals so I could drive tractor.
That had to be an adventure.
Probably more for him than me.
Yeah. Well, and that just puts farming in your blood then, right?
Right, yeah. Yep.
Have you farmed anything other than grapes?
No, just grapes.
I mean, again, having all this property here, do you set your sights on expansion if you can as time goes on?
This fall, we tore out another 3 acres of Concords. We will not plant it this spring. We'll take the summer to get tiling in, the ground fitted, ready to go. And then next spring, we'll plant some more wine grapes. We haven't quite decided exactly which varieties we want to plant, but that's the plan.
And again, the fascinating thing about being a winemaker and a farmer is the length of time till those grapes actually produce wine for you. Wow, that's tough.
Too long.
It's not exactly a great business plan, is it?
No. We will take a very small crop this year on the last block of Cabernet Sauvignon that we planted, 3 acres, which we planted 2 years ago. This year, they will be able to be put up on the load wire. And again, very small crop. We'll take probably a half a ton per acre off of them.
Wow.
But it's a start. You know, so then the following year, hopefully, we'll get around a ton, maybe a ton and a half per acre.
Well, you have to start somewhere, and that's the whole idea about farming is the investment in the time and the land. But grape farming, again, unique to any other type of farming.
It definitely is unique.
Your own time when you came around to wine, when did that kind of get into your head?
We about 8 years ago, we came into the idea of doing a winery. We had some folks come through and offer us a lot of money for the family farm. The problem arose when we went to the accountant and they told us what we were going to pay the government in taxes between excise tax, inheritance tax, income tax, and we didn't feel like we should give away a third of the family farm back to the government. So we decided to do this at our own pace.
That was a good decision.
Yeah. Looking back, we'd do it again.
Yeah. Was this, to me, looks like a brand new building. Was this built off of something, or is this?
Nope, the building we put up brand new, started from scratch, actually sits where a Concord vineyard sat probably 10 years ago.
And your cellar, as I recall, is right below us.
Cellar right below us. We have approximately 30 by 60 as far as a wine cellar. Walls are 14 foot tall, so we can go up with tanks. We tried to make the least of a footprint that we could. Kind of run out of space so far, but we're doing all right making do with the space that we have.
Well, again, you got a great area here. Let me ask you a question. As we drove in, for our listeners, there'll be pictures, but there's vines obviously on both sides of the drive. Then we have a really nice wooded area off to the right. I'm assuming that's part of your property as well, or not?
Yes, it is.
And I'm not necessarily one to suggest, gee, we should be ripping down trees, but is that something you would consider in the future?
Yeah, consider doing it there. There used to be Concord Vineyard there also. But I believe before my time, those grapes were let go or tore out because the growing area there was not conducive to growing grapes right. Faces a different way than the rest of the vineyard. The air seems to stagnate down in there, a little bit of a valley. So if I remember correctly, what I was told in the past was that they had a tough time growing grapes there.
Well, it's good advice to take then after that. Yeah. Why? Especially when it comes to the money you'd have to put into that.
Realistically, I guess here in this area to plant an acre of vinifera right now, without buying the property, you're looking at close to $20,000 by the time you're done with all your expenses.
Once again, the millionaire winemakers of the world who sit back and watch TV and just collect their money, right?
Yeah, that's not us.
Yeah, no, no.
How to make a small fortune in the wine industry? Start with a big one.
Yeah, I've heard that once or twice. And you're the winemaker as well, right?
I am the winemaker as well.
Did you have any formal schooling? Did you attend any university?
No formal schooling. I did do a short time over at Ferrante Winery around the corner back some time ago. But in the wine industry in this area, there's a lot of people that will help you. You just can't be scared to ask for help. When it doesn't necessarily come out right, more times than not, you can fix that wine, make it right, but you have to ask someone that has the knowledge to be able to help you get there.
So there is a reasonable amount of, I use the word reasonable, amount of cooperation between winemakers out.
Yes, between winemakers, definitely there's a reasonable amount of cooperation. We also get a lot of help from Ohio State University. We have a research center probably 15 miles from here that is staffed year-round. Plus their knowledgeists, any other people in that program, whether it be at Worcester, Columbus, or here in Kingsville, they're a phone call away.
That's nice. It's great to have that kind of support. I mean, it's no different than UC Davis for Napa. You know, this is just an extension of, well, wine growing all over the country. Mm-hmm. To have backup like that's huge.
It is huge.
Yeah. So is this regarded as a family winery? Is it any members of your family involved other than yourself?
Just my family, myself, my wife, and two kids. Other than that, I have a sister who lives in Youngstown, but not involved in the winery.
How old are your kids?
My kids are 15 and 12.
So now you got a 15-year-old. Does she have a vineyard now?
She does not have a vineyard now. She has all aspirations of leaving and going to college for different areas, but... it's kind of neat to see her looking through the computer at some of the universities that offer oenology and viticulture now. Not saying it'll get to there, but at least she looks at them.
I think that says a lot, because I'm sure you know, and maybe you had the same thing when you were young, where a lot of farmers, kids of farmers, want to get away until they realize what they had. Did you go through that at all?
I did go away to school, only in Western Ohio. My idea was to graduate college, get out of here, have a degree in management computer systems. By the time I got done with my computer systems part, it was outdated. My parents became ill. I came home to take care of the farm and other family business, and I've never left. Don't regret one minute of it.
Boy, if that's not a classic farm story, I don't know what is. I mean, to come back and take care of it. But you do get bit by it, don't you?
You get bit by it. You know, the Concord grapes, you could take care of as many acres as you wanted to and do it as a part-time job and still have a full-time job. Once you get into the vinifera grapes and into the winemaking and the business part of it here, it's more than a full-time job.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, winemaking obviously is a very serious effort. And as we sit, we have the bar right behind where you're sitting, and you make a lot of different wines.
Probably too many, but it keeps us busy in the cellar. Once we get close on being out of something, we try to figure out, well, maybe we won't make that wine again. People start asking for it again. All of the wines that we do have up on the board, we do sell a decent amount of them, so I don't know where we would cut.
About how many cases are you doing, roughly?
We do right around 5,000 gallons a year, so I guess around 2,000 cases or so that we'll do. 98% of that is retail through the winery.
It's interesting to see, too. Now, this is obviously a very popular area for wine, and prices have changed from what they were in the past. Of course, your costs have gone up. That's the biggest thing. But there's been so much more respect for wines in this part of the state because they're very well made. Pinot Noir out here is really, really popular, and you guys do a great job with it.
We are starting to learn how to grow the grapes correctly to be able to get fruit that we can make into a very nice Pinot Noir. Our climate, cool climate, and we do have long enough to ripen it. It ripens pretty early in our growing season. So even along with Pinot Noir, we do Cabernet Sauvignon, we do Merlot. A little tougher to grow those varieties, but we still, if you grow them right, you can make a good wine out of them.
What other wines are you making here?
Along with the Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Pinot Noir, we do a Chardonnay, a Riesling, Vidal. Those are all estate wines that we do here. We also make Traminette, Chancellor, that we source the grapes from nearby New York.
So that's pretty broad. I like your attitude, though, of, you know, while you might drop one because maybe it wasn't your favorite, the idea of trying to experiment and go somewhere different, that's brave because it's your money.
We'd like to do a little bit of experimenting. We're experimenting with a few different things in the cellar right now. Our goal with that number of wines is that when we have a group come through here of 20 or 30 people, everybody's tastes aren't the same. And there's still a wide range of people that like sweet wines, probably 80% of them. Not necessarily my favorite wine, but we want to be able to try to get a wine that everyone in that group can enjoy for the hour, hour and a half that they're here. And then maybe they'll buy a couple bottles to take home with them.
I think half the time, too, when you're at a winery, when you're at the winery, there's just something so much more special about drinking that wine. Would you agree?
I agree. Wine always tastes better at a winery.
Yeah, you just have the atmosphere. And this is, again, the room we're in, it's a really nice room. As I said, we were here last year. You had some entertainment, which is nice. And you do entertainment fairly regularly, right?
We do entertainment through the summer on Fridays and Saturdays. Through the non-peak times in the winter, we'll do just entertainment on Saturdays. April through January 1st, we're open 7 days a week. The balance of the year during the cold weather months, we do close Mondays and Tuesdays.
Which makes a lot of sense. And you have a deck and then kind of an open space beyond that as well. So do you do some type of events from time to time?
In the summertime, we'll move the music outside if the weather's right. Otherwise, it just gives us room for people to sit and relax and enjoy. The lower seating area situated right amongst the vineyards, so people can take their bottle of wine, sit down at a picnic table, enjoy walking through the vineyard.
That's the nice thing about it, being right in the vineyard like that. And I mean, you talk about the weather, Ohio weather. One of the things I worry about and I think about wines here is, of course, any kind of frost damage. Do you run into problems with that at all?
We don't necessarily run into it here. In the past 30, 40 years, the worst that we've had spring frost damage, we lost about 30 to 40% 1 year out of there.
I'm going to interrupt you for a minute now. Just to point this out to our listeners, imagine going home with 30 to 40% less of your paycheck. That would be really hard to pay your rent or your mortgage on.
Well, in the farming industry, you're used to it. Yeah. You know, if something else happens and you have zero of your paycheck, you have to have a way to get through it till the next year. We laugh about it sometimes and liken it to going to Las Vegas. Put it on red or black your whole year. You know, sometimes you're going to get it, sometimes you're not.
Tony, you have a great attitude. I got to tell you, you're just so relaxed about it where some people will be constantly stressed, and you don't want to be stressed about making wine. You want to be relaxed.
Correct. I think one of the biggest hurdles in making wine is having patience. Something that may not be to your liking today as it's working into the wine that you want it to. Today you might not like it. Taste it 3, 4, 5 months from now. Maybe one of the best wines that you ever made, but you just have to have that patience. We're not necessarily making the wine that we want to drink. We're trying to make the wine that our customers would enjoy.
Sure. What do you think about the possibility of cellaring wines in this area, is there a good future for wine to be cellared at all? And I'm not talking 20 years here, but I mean a reasonable period of time.
There is. One of the tough things that we run into here at our winery, being young, is an inventory issue. You know, we'll make a batch of wine, we'll get it all set and go, and then all of a sudden we get to the end and we're out. So we'll go a short time before the next year's vintage is ready. Would it be nice to get to the end of a vintage and be able to throw 50 or 100 cases to the side? Yes, it would. And hopefully we can do that in the future.
Well, like you say, you're young. That takes time for a winery to do that. Do you have any kind of a wine club?
We do not have a wine club as of yet. We're looking forward to maybe starting one this spring.
I've talked to some people, a number of wineries, especially in lesser known areas, although this is a well-known area for wines, but it can be a challenge when you have a club, especially when you make a wine that's really popular and then poof, it's gone, and some of your fans come to you with angry faces. It's the idea of success can be dangerous.
Right, exactly. So we're in the process of building our inventory. I think right now we are probably to the point where we would have one whole year's inventory in the cellar. So really, if we had no grapes this year, we could make it for an extra year on the inventory that we do have.
That's nice. It gives you a little bit of security somewhere along the way. Do you get a chance to go out to any of their wine-growing places, Finger Lakes, Washington, Napa?
We get to the Finger Lakes once in a while, Niagara-on-the-Lake. Niagara-on-the-Lake is one of our favorites. Turn it into a vacation, a winecation.
Classic Ohio.
Classic Ohio. And we do use some of what we learn there back here. Anywhere you go that there's wine, you can learn.
If there's anything a winemaker would tell you, is the more you learn, the more you need to know, or you need to learn.
If in this industry you think you know it all, you must pack it in because you're done.
I can't even imagine. So any idea, you know, what you're looking like for the future of growing the business? Anything you want to talk about?
We want to add some more vineyards as far as here. Our goal would be to be 100% estate. We probably will never achieve that goal. It's a goal to shoot at, though.
Well, and the other thing is, as time goes on, I mean, obviously grapes have been grown here for a long time in this part of Ohio. Wine grapes, again, have a great history, and they do in Ohio going back to the 1800s, but yet this area is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger every year, and you're a great example of it being a newer winery. That, theoretically, is going to continue, that popularity.
I believe that we will continue to grow. I believe that more wineries is better. As long as the wineries that are coming on board now have a winery plan as far as growing grapes, making wine, etc. Some of the wineries that come in that don't grow grapes, don't make very much wine, I don't necessarily agree with. I think that everyone should be a farm winery to be a winery. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to grow 100% of your own grapes, but you need to grow some of them and make your wine.
Kind of the old dirt under the fingernails thing, isn't it?
Exactly.
And while making wine itself is definitely its own art, when you know the land, you know what you're working with.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
I think that's really our whole story in a nutshell, from a Concord vineyard to a winery.
I like that. Well, because while it might be typical in Ohio, in general, it's not. You know what I mean?
Most of our wineries here now, though, are getting away I shouldn't say getting away from Concord, because as I said before, there's still people here that want to drink Concord. They want to drink Niagara. They want Pink Catawba. And you can exclude those people, but if you exclude those people, that source of income goes away. So you can stick your nose up in the air and say, I'm only going to sell vinifera. I'm not going to do anything else. I'm going to Cab Sauv, Chardonnay, Cab Franc. But when that group of 20 people comes in and somebody's looking for a sweet wine and you don't have one to give them, and those 20 people walk back out and go down the road to somebody that does, you know, you take a hit that way.
It's no different than many wineries that make fruit wines. While a number of us might put our noses up in the air to it and say, well, we won't be drinking it, it is very, very popular with people. And that's what can lead you into vinifera. Wouldn't you say that's a great
entry? Exactly, yep.
Everybody has to learn from somewhere.
Not only the winemaker has to learn, but the customer has to learn also. So if they come in and you know, they want to drink a very sweet wine and they buy a bottle of ice wine to sit there and drink. At least they came in, they're experiencing wine. The next time they come in, well, maybe they'll get somewhere in the middle between dry and sweet. And if you see these people evolve, and we've seen it here in the 3 years that have come in drinking sweet wine, and now they drink Cabernet Sauvignon. So to that, that's an accomplishment.
It's an evolution for the person, too.
For the person, yes. Yeah.
And I think virtually every one of us, you might be an exception because of your history with grapes, but many of us have gone through that, you know, that road.
I went through it, too, when we were too young to drink. And, you know, our parents made Concord wine. The only way you could drink it was you kept putting sugar to it till it was sweet enough to balance some of the acid out of it. And so that's we grew up drinking that.
Still not a bad way to start. You got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere.
Tony, for our listeners who'd like to learn a little bit more about you and the winery, how would they do that online?
You can go to kosichikvineyards.com. Our website lists our hours, our wines, menu, and entertainment.
And it's K-O-S-I-C-E-K.
That's correct.
Which is important when you're going to look it up. I had to throw that in. And again, for the winery here, you're not by appointment. People can just come in and enjoy.
Just come in any time during open hours. We will give you a tasting. If you want to take a look at the cellar, as long as it's not too tore up down there, let me know. We'll take you down there. And we'd love to see you.
Winemakers love to show off their cellars, and I think people love to go there.
People love to look in the cellar.
Tony, I really appreciate you taking the time. This is very cool. You have a great winery. I wish you great success.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cling.
Learn more by visiting kosichikvineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2017.